Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Conspiracy Book, a chronological journey through secret societies and hidden histories by John Michael Greer. Narrated by Tom Parks. This is the real history of secret societies in the Western world, a fascinating tapestry of forgotten struggles and lost causes, of hidden groups of men and women who pursued agendas that would one day triumph, and of others laboring just as hard for agendas that would end only in oblivion. John Michael Greer from the introduction. Introduction. Conspiracy is as old as the human race. A million years ago, when our distant ancestors were still adapting to the vast climate changes that forced them down out of the trees, ambitious young prehumans doubtless made plans to go out hunting with a dominant elder and put a spear through his back. The plot hatched in secret, the arrangements made out of sight of watchful eyes, the sudden act that no one but the plotters expects. These are in our bones and our blood, part of what it means to be human. The organized secret society, though, is a far more recent thing. The Roman senators who plotted the assassination of Julius Caesar in 43 BCE, for example, didn't found a society that met in secret for years afterward. They planned Caesar's death, carried out the plan, and then tried and failed to seize power openly. A long series of events, beginning in the Middle Ages, was needed to lay the foundations for the rise of secret societies as a significant historical reality. Then, when the conditions were right, it took an improbable collision between two very different things, a men's social club with an exotic origin and an exiled royal house scrambling for a way back into power, to kickstart the golden age of secret societies. The men's social club was Freemasonry, the ancient and honorable society of free and accepted Masons, to give it its full title. Freemasonry started off in the Middle Ages as a craft guild in the building trades, not much different from the guilds of butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, and other trades that managed economic life in medieval Europe. Guilds had initiation rituals, regular meetings, and oaths of membership that bound initiates not to reveal certain trade secrets to outsiders, all features that would be useful in the secret societies of the future. Economic changes at the end of the Middle Ages swept most guilds into oblivion. The Stonemason's Guild survived in Britain by turning itself into a social club, inviting men who were not stonemasons to join as accepted masons. We would call them honorary members today. By 1700, most members in most of the stonemasons' lodges in Britain were accepted masons rather than builders, and the lodges had begun to attract wealthy and influential members, who found Freemasonry a useful source of social connections. That was when the other ingredient in the rise of secret societies entered the mix. The House of Stuart, the former royal house of Britain, thrown out of power in a revolution in 1688 and replaced by the House of Hanover. Supporters of the House of Stuart were called Jacobites, after Jacobus, the Latin version of the name of the deposed King James II. All through the first half of the 18th century, they carried on a campaign of subversion and propaganda against the Hanoverian government, and twice, in 1715 and 1745, launched rebellions in the name of the Stuart cause. After the defeat of the 1715 Rising, the Jacobites set out to use every available means to undermine the House of Hanover, and in the process, they infiltrated Freemasonry and launched several new branches of it as a cover for their activities. The Jacobites failed, and Freemasonry soon returned to its enduring role as a charitable and social society for men. But the idea of using secret societies to overthrow unpopular governments caught on. Over the course of the 18th century, secret societies sprang up all over Europe. The outbreak of the French Revolution in 1789 threw this process into overdrive. And for the next century, the golden age of secret societies, conspiracies from every point on the political spectrum pushed their own agendas using the classic toolkit of the secret society. In the United States, secret societies found a home early on. The Revolutionary War was launched by two secret societies, the Committees of Correspondence and the Sons of Liberty, and plenty of other conspiracies and secret organizations tried to promote their causes and undercut their opponents from that point on. It was quite literally true for many years that for every secret society, there was an equal and opposite secret society. The fear of secret societies rose in parallel with secret societies themselves. Not all the fears that were splashed over 18th and 19th century mass media were based on realities, though. Demagogues at various points on the political spectrum discovered the uses of whipping their listeners into a panic over the supposed activities of secret societies. Outright frauds and fabrications also won their share of public attention. One ironic result of the rise of anti-secret society agitation was a vast exaggeration of the power, effectiveness, and age of secret societies themselves. From the beginning, secret societies had been claiming to be bigger, older, and stronger than they actually were, since this helped them attract members. The opponents of secret societies found similarly that it was easier to attract members to their crusade if they exaggerated the size, age, and power of the secret societies they were fighting. By the late 20th century, as a result, best-selling books and widely watched documentaries splashed around wild claims about secret societies and conspiracies, and succeeded mostly in obscuring the fascinating reality behind the claims. What has been missed in all the hullabaloo is that secrecy is a tool of the weak. People turn to conspiracy when they don't have the political, economic, or cultural influence to pursue their goals by more direct means. When a secret society gathers enough power to push its agenda in public, it promptly morphs into a political party, an army, or a government. That was what happened to the Committees of Correspondence and the Sons of Liberty after 1775, when the cause of American independence had won enough support in the 13 colonies to make the revolution possible. Scores of other secret societies down through the years made the same transition once they were strong enough. But there were always many more that never managed to accomplish their goals and faded out of existence as times changed. For nearly three centuries, therefore, secret societies provided a setting where new movements for radical change found a home and began the long struggle to make their dreams a reality. Some of the dreams of secret societies turned out to be nightmares. Both the Nazi Party and the Communist movement, for example, started out as secret societies, succeeded in making the transition to real power, and splashed the 20th century with the blood of millions. Other secret societies pursued more humane goals, seeking to liberate their homelands from foreign overlords, to push democratic reforms onto oppressive regimes, or in some cases, to oppose secret societies with toxic goals by turning their own methods against them. This is the real history of secret societies in the Western world, a fascinating tapestry of forgotten struggles and lost causes, of hidden groups of men and women who pursued agendas that would one day triumph, and of others laboring just as hard for agendas that would end only in oblivion. It is a history that has contributed more than most people realize to the world we live in today. The conspiracy book is the password and secret sign that will open that history to you. the Temple of Solomon, circa 975 BCE. In the 10th century BCE, the Middle East was a patchwork of little kingdoms, hundreds of them, each with its own language, culture, and religion. Each centered on a national temple where priests offered sacrifices to the local god or goddess. The Kingdom of Israel was just one more of these tiny nations. And when King Solomon of Israel, circa 970 to 931 BCE, built a temple in Jerusalem for his people's guardian deity, it was such a standard project that he was able to ask his ally, King Hiram of Tyre, circa 1000 to circa 946 BCE, to send trained builders and metalworkers for the job. Nor was the temple he built on a hill just north of the original city of Jerusalem anything out of the ordinary. A plain, rectangular building with stone walls and a wooden roof, 90 feet long, 30 feet wide, and 45 feet high, covered with a thin layer of hammered gold. 2,000 years later, the collected legends of Solomon's little kingdom had become the Old Testament of a major world religion. In medieval Europe, as economic activity sprang back to life after the long crisis of the Dark Ages, local guilds of tradesmen borrowed stories from the Bible and the lives of the saints as raw material for the simple ceremonies by which new members were initiated. A guild of stonemasons somewhere in the British Isles, probably but not certainly in what is now Scotland, adopted the story of the building of King Solomon's temple for that purpose. Other stonemasons' guilds had different rituals, focusing on such other stories as the building of the Tower of Babel. Many centuries later, however, as stonemasons' guilds in Britain began to mutate into something very different, the ritual about the building of the Temple of Solomon would become the core initiation ceremony of Freemasonry. See also the Regius Manuscript, circa 1390, Rituals of Brothering, 1639. The Pythagorean Brotherhood, 6th century BCE. In the 6th century BCE, the city of Crotona in southern Italy was a booming Greek colony, a center of new economic and intellectual ventures. That's where Pythagoras, circa 570 to circa 495 BCE, settled when he finished his travels across the ancient world in search of wisdom. The inventor of the word philosopher and a brilliant mathematician, Pythagoras was also a mystic, and the organization he founded, the Pythagorean Brotherhood, taught a complex system of thought in which geometry, vegetarianism, and reincarnation played important roles. While it drew some of its features from older Greek social institutions and others from the temples of Egypt where Pythagoras had studied, the Pythagorean Brotherhood was something new in the Western world. Its members joined voluntarily, took oaths of secrecy and obedience to the organization, and rose gradually up through the order's ranks, learning its teachings and secrets step by step as they proceeded. That same pattern would become the standard template for secret societies in centuries to come. The Brotherhood drew much of its membership from Crotona's wealthy upper class, and so it inevitably got entangled in the bitter struggles between aristocratic and populist parties that shook the Greek world during the 6th century BCE. Around 500 BCE, those struggles spawned savage riots in Crotona and several nearby cities. During the riots, many members of the Brotherhood barricaded themselves inside its Crotona headquarters and died when the rioters burned the building to the ground. Pythagoras himself escaped to the nearby town of Metapontum, where he died a few years later. Other survivors scattered across the Greek world, bearing Pythagorean teachings and the idea of a secret, oath-bound organization with them. See also the Gnostics, 1st century CE. The Gnostics, 1st century CE. they called themselves the people of knowledge. That is what nostikoi means in ancient Greek, and all through the first few centuries of the Christian era, they could be found all over the Roman Empire and beyond it. No one is sure exactly when or where the first Gnostic teachings emerged, or who founded their faith. The Gnostics themselves taught that their faith was the true teaching of Jesus Christ, which had been suppressed by the established churches but flourished in secret. To the Gnostics, salvation was a matter not of faith but of personal knowledge. The universe, they believed, was the creation of an evil power, the Demiurge, and human souls were imprisoned there far from their true home in the eternal world of light. Jesus had come from the world of light to teach the secret knowledge that would set souls free, the knowledge of their true nature as beings of the world of light, and the rituals, meditations, and practices that would free them from the world of matter once and for all. Gnosticism originally emerged in the tolerant religious climate of the Roman world, and it flourished through the first three centuries of the Christian era. Once the mainstream Christian church seized political power in the Roman world, however, Gnosticism was declared heretical, and Gnostics risked being imprisoned, exiled, or executed for their beliefs. The obvious solution was to go underground. For more than 1,000 years thereafter, Gnostic sects concealed themselves from church authorities and passed on their teachings only in secret to recruits who had been carefully vetted for discretion and loyalty. In the process, they laid a foundation on which future secret societies would build. See also the Cathars, 1030. The Cathars, 1030. All through the Middle Ages, religion dominated life in the Western world to an extent that is hard to imagine today. And so the secret groups that emerged in those years were almost all religious in nature. One of the most important was the Cathar movement, which emerged in Italy in the 11th century. The first known Cathar congregation was in Monteforte, Italy, and existed by 1030. The name Cathar comes from the Greek word for pure. Their enemies called them the Albigensians, those people from Albi, after a city in France where they had an early presence. Their faith, however, came straight out of ancient Gnosticism. They believed that human souls came from a world of light, but had been trapped in the material world by the trickery of the devil, and that Christ had come to show the imprisoned souls the way to escape. Like most Gnostic sects, they admitted women to the clergy and had a more relaxed attitude towards sex than their Catholic adversaries. Cathar clergy vowed themselves to poverty, celibacy, and vegetarianism, but ordinary believers were free of such restrictions. The Cathar movement was secret in its early days, but by 1200 it had become the majority faith in southern France and abandoned the cloak of secrecy. This proved to be a disastrous mistake. In 1209, the Pope proclaimed a crusade against the Cathars. Over the next 35 years, the south of France was ravaged by Catholic armies in a bloodbath that reduced the population of the region by more than half, and the Cathar movement was effectively destroyed. The brutality of the response convinced many other alternative religious movements that total secrecy was necessary to their survival. See also the Gnostics, 1st century CE, the Adamites, 1400. Fall of the Knights Templar, 1307. The Order of Knights Templar, a great European order of knighthood, was not a secret society. Founded in 1118 by 9 crusading knights, it became rich and influential. By the 14th century, its wealth had made it a tempting prize for greedy monarchs, and the defeat of the Christian side in the Crusades deprived the Knights Templar of its official reason for existence. while the Grand Master of the Order, Jacques de Molay, circa 1243 to 1314, lobbied the kings of Europe for a new crusade. One of those kings, Philip IV of France, 1268 to 1314, made plans of his own. On Friday, October 13, 1307, royal officials across France raided Templar properties in the kingdom and arrested every Templar they could find. The charge was heresy. The captive Templars were tortured to make them confess to a laundry list of crimes. The following year, Pope Clement V, circa 1264 to 1314, ordered Templars throughout Europe arrested. And in 1312, the Knights Templar Order was dissolved by the Council of Vienne. Most of the order's members were allowed to join other monastic orders, but Jacques de Molay and 60 other knights were burned at the stake. According to legend, de Molay called on Philip and Clement to join him before God's tribunal. If so, the curse was effective, for king and pope were both dead within a year. Legend also had it that some Templars escaped arrest and sought refuge in Scotland, and that Freemasonry descends in part from the heritage of the Templars. Whether this was true or not, it helped shape a future age of conspiracies against political and religious absolutism. See also Ramsay's Oration, 1736, The Strict Observance, 1754, The Convention of Wilhelmsbad, 1782, The French Revolution, 1789. The Regius Manuscript, circa 1390. These words come from the oldest surviving set of rules for master stonemasons in Britain. They were copied by hand around 1390 and bound into a book which became part of the Library of the Kings of England around the beginning of the 16th century, and now forms part of the collection of the British Library. Historians call it the Regius Manuscript. In 1390, the stonemasons' guilds in Britain were ordinary trade organizations of a kind found all over medieval Europe. Like guilds in other trades, they regulated hours, working conditions, and the training of workmen, and also provided charitable services to their members and the community. They had a great deal of traditional symbolism and ornate initiation rituals for new apprentices, workmen, and masters, but this was also true of other guilds, even those with no claim to a connection with the Knights Templar. In the centuries that followed the penning of the Regius Manuscript, however, the guild system fell apart, swept aside by new conditions as Britain embraced a market economy. Most guilds went out of existence. The stonemasons' guilds managed to survive by bringing in new members from outside the building trades. In the process, they morphed into Freemasonry and established the template on which nearly all later secret societies would be built. See also the Shaw Statutes, 1598, the First Masonic Grand Lodge, 1717. The Adamites, circa 1400. The Cathars were far from the only medieval religious secret society to help set the stage for the great age of conspiracies to come. Another example was the Adamite movement, which was founded in what is now the Czech Republic around 1400 by a visionary named Picard. Convinced that he had been chosen by God to lead humanity back to paradise, Picard renamed himself Adam, Son of God, and announced that since Christ came to free humanity from sin, all true believers were incapable of sinning. His followers accordingly considered all members to be priests, worshipped in the nude, and practiced sexual promiscuity, insisting, "To the pure, all things are pure." Such customs offered female converts opportunities for leadership roles and sexual satisfaction that were rarely available to women in medieval society, and the Adamite movement, accordingly, became a significant presence all through Central and Western Europe in the late Middle Ages. The Catholic Church responded to the movement in its usual heavy-handed way, and many hundred of Adamites were tried and burned at the stake for heresy in the 15th and 16th centuries. The movement regrouped by going underground, becoming a secret society with signs of recognition, secret meetings in the homes of members, and recruitment through personal contacts. These arrangements proved successful enough that the Adamite movement under various names survived for at least three centuries. Later secret societies would borrow many of the same features for their own uses. See also the Alumbrados, 1511. The Alumbrados, 1511. Maria de Santo Domingo, circa 1480 to 1524, was the most harmless of religious visionaries. A devout Spanish Catholic from the little town of Piedrahita near Toledo, she became convinced that the human soul could achieve holiness by emptying itself of thoughts and desires and focusing its attention entirely on God. She began to teach her ideas in Toledo in 1511 and quickly won a following among local Catholics. Those who accepted her teachings called themselves the Alumbrados, Spanish for the Illuminated Ones. Over on the other side of the planet, a very similar set of ideas played a central role in Zen Buddhism. But that tradition emerged in a far more tolerant religious environment than that which Maria de Santo Domingo faced. Her venture into Catholic Zen promptly landed her in trouble with church officials, who took exception to her teachings on various points of doctrine and called in the Inquisition. While she herself managed to avoid the stake, many of her followers were tortured and burned as heretics in the years that followed. The gentle rise and brutal fall of the Alumbrados would have been just another footnote in the long history of religious intolerance in the Western world, except for one small detail, the name that Maria's followers chose for themselves. Translated into Latin, the phrase Illuminated Ones is Illuminati. Centuries later, after the French Revolution, conspiracy theorists tried to pin the blame for the turmoil of those years on a very different secret society, the Bavarian Illuminati, used the coincidence of names to claim that the Bavarian Order had existed since the Middle Ages. See also the Illuminae of Avignon, 1770, the Bavarian Illuminati, 1776. The Family of Love, 1555. Another influential religious secret society, the Family of Love, was founded in 1555 by the German mystic Heinrich Nicolai. Its members believed that experiencing the love of God was more important than believing in an officially approved set of doctrines, and held that the Bible ought to be interpreted as an allegory of the soul's relationship with God, rather than taken literally. In the hothouse religious atmosphere of the 16th century, that was enough to get the family denounced, condemned, and imprisoned or exiled. As a result, the familists, as Nicolai's followers were called, went underground. Familists thus concealed their membership and attended the officially approved church services of countries in which they lived. They recruited new members quietly, sounding out potential converts in advance, and not mentioning the phrase family of love until the new recruit had proven his or her readiness to keep the secret. By these methods, the family spread throughout England, the Netherlands, and northern Germany, despite the efforts of more orthodox religious bodies to keep them in check. With the coming of the 17th century, as Europe dissolved into savage religious warfare, the familist movement faded out, though its ideas became widespread all through the radical religious scene of the time. The family may also have played a role in inspiring the Rosicrucian movement. Certainly, its use of secrecy and concealment were copied by many other organizations as religious struggles gave way to political and economic conflict.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?